This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It's our monthly discussion of national news and politics and your phone calls, your thoughts on the matters at hand. We're joined today via Zoom by the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hey, Ken.
Hello, Michael.
Glad to have you back. And also us is the University of Oklahoma Assistant Professor of Political Science, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Rachel, welcome back to our show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad to have you all for our last political junkie of 2020, and what a 2020 it's been. And before we dive into what's happening now and what's happened all year in this nation, as always, when Ken Rudin is with us, we start the program with a trivia question. We have a special treat for y'all today because it's a double dose of potential prizes. Ken, tell us what the trivia question is.
Well, the trivia question, the reason it's two, I'll tell you in a second why there's two prizes, because it's two questions. I was thinking of this. Congresswoman Marsha Fudge of Cleveland has been nominated by Biden to be Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. So thinking of that she'd have to leave her congressional seat, my question is, well, two questions. Who was the last Ohio Democrat and who was the last Ohio Republican to leave office to serve in the cabinet? And you have to, yet when you call in, you have to say whether you're answering the Democratic answer or the Republican answer. You can't do both.
So only one opportunity. You can't get a double dose of, wait, what's the prize?
A very rare political junkie button. And by the way, political junkie t-shirts and socks will be available in the next week or two.
Oh my gosh, we're excited about that, but they're so rare, these political junkie buttons, that we are giving away two today if you call and get the correct answer. Again, you only get a chance to win one, so identify whether you're going to name the Democrat or the Republican. You can give us a call at 513-419-7100. That's also the number to call to share your thoughts on the state of the nation, what you're seeing in politics right now. If you want to ask anything about what's happened this year, Ken Rudin and Rachel Bloom are our guests for the full hour. We hope that you will join us as well. I'll start with where we tend to start, and that is the latest out of the White House. Ken, President Trump has still refused to formally concede the election loss that he suffered in November. He is making some references, of course, to the Biden administration, to what might happen next. But, I mean, just an hour ago, he's tweeting about non-citizens voting in Nevada. Again, claims he's made without substantiation, not just by the media, but by the courts, including many Republican-appointed justices, as he's lost time and time again seeking to overturn the results of the election. What are the long-term impacts, do you think, on our country's democracy based on the president's behavior?
Well, that's a great question. I think it seriously hurts it. I mean, there are some people who think that kind of an answer is alarmist. And they say, well, the fact is, on January 20th, there'll be a peaceful transfer of power and everything will be fine. But the fact is that not only does Donald Trump believe this, or at least he says he believes it, but he's gotten nearly half the country to believe that the election was stolen, that it was fraudulent, that it was just, you know, illegal voters who voted for Joe Biden. He said that in 2016 when he lost the popular vote to Hillary Clinton. He said, well, the reason I lost in California because of all these people who voted illegally. And that's scary. But let me just say one thing about the earlier thing you said. Whether he concedes or not doesn't matter. Al Gore, remember, in 2000, conceded, then unconceded, then conceded again. I always thought he was very conceited. But I mean, the fact is that it doesn't matter. He won't concede. Trump will never acknowledge the fact that he lost. The scary thing, and this is what CNN reported today, is that Trump is actually, believe it or not, talking about not leaving. And there's a great meme on social media where you see Trump talking about a fraudulent election while movers are carrying him out of the White House onto a moving truck. But I mean, his people believe, look, you had 60% of the Republicans in Congress last week supporting that Supreme Court bid that, you know, five states elected where the votes were illegal. So a good portion of the Republican Party, and I dare say of the country, still believe that he was jobbed out of the election.
That's Ken Rudin, the political junkie. We're also joined by University of Oklahoma Assistant Professor of Political Science, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Dr. Bloom, should we rest assured that in spite of perhaps vocalized or tweeted attacks on the democratic process in this country, there are still mechanisms in place to ensure that if a losing president wants to remain at the White House on January 20th after losing the election, it's not possible?
It's hard to say anything is not possible. So there's always a small chance, even if it's, you know, 0.01. But I would be really surprised if Trump did not leave the White House. The Secret Service could, as Biden's pointed out several times, escort him out of the White House. As time goes on, we are starting to see more and more Republican leaders split off from Trump and congratulate Biden on his win. So by the time we get to January, it seems doubtful to me that we will still have a Trump who refuses to leave the White House and thinks he can get away with it.
What do we expect of him if and when he should leave the White House, Rachel? I'm listening to what you just said about the senators, and it's true. I mean, even Mitch McConnell just this week acknowledged President-elect Biden because of the Electoral College vote casting its ballots and making it constitutionally official that Joe Biden will be the next president. I'm wondering, based on what we know of the president and his inner circle wishes getting smaller, who's going to have to make that call to him? Who's going to have to sit down and talk to him and advise him on how to exit in a way that soothes his ego?
I think a lot of people would like to know that. We can speculate that maybe Ivanka or someone else in his immediate family might have some success, although we know that even his daughter has not been able to keep him from tweeting when it would be better for him not to tweet. It's possible that he might listen a little bit to his chief of staff. Maybe he'll listen to Mike Pence. He doesn't really seem to reliably take orders from anyone or anywhere, though. If he doesn't hear what he wants from one place, he'll move on to another place. Now, I think he is incredibly sensitive to how he's perceived in the court of public opinion and by the entertainment industry. So he might decide he needs to save face. He might decide that there's a money-making venture that he could switch to instead. Maybe he'll start his own news network. But I think he'll find a way to do what he's been doing so far, which is to say in the same tweet that he's lost, but also that he won't concede.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. We're joined by Ken Rudin, the political junkie, and Dr. Rachel Bloom of the University of Oklahoma. Ken, as we just discussed with Rachel there are more and more Republican members of Congress coming out and acknowledging that Joe Biden won the election. However, there are others in the Senate even who are still spreading these baseless claims against the election results. We saw Senator Ron Johnson, as the Washington Post reported, quote, re-air Trump's baseless case against the election results in swing states. We saw Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul declaring, quote, the election in many ways was stolen. So it's not just the president who is doing this. There are people in the Republican Party in Congress who are bolstering these false claims. I asked you before the impact on democracy. Perhaps that was a broad question that, of course, you handled. But what about the impact on the Republican Party? Is there going to be a lasting impact on them?
Absolutely. I mean, this is Donald Trump's party. There's no question about it. Remember, the only, like, for example, Paul Mitchell, the Michigan Republican who's not running for didn't run for re-election this year anyway, quit the Republican Party because he was so ashamed that 60% of the House Republicans backed this challenge at the Supreme Court, that five states, their voting mechanisms and their vote tallies were wrong and incorrect and stolen and malfunctioned and all those things and flawed. So, I mean, the fact that you have 126 members of the House, you have 18 Republican attorneys general who basically backed this challenge at the Supreme Court, they are not leaving Trump anytime soon. And for all the commendations that Mitch McConnell is getting for calling Joe Biden the president-elect, I mean, first of all, it took a month for him to do it. He amused and let Trump get away with all he was doing for the past month. But remember, when Mike DeWine, the governor of Ohio, decided to call Joe Biden president-elect, when Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, decided to say that the voting was done correctly, Donald Trump is now encouraging Republicans to run against both DeWine and Kemp in 2022. So for all the Republicans who are slowly starting to say, yes, Joe Biden won the election, I think there are even more who are deathly afraid of upsetting Trump and thus fearing his wrath in a primary battle. So the Republican Party is Donald Trump's. They don't seem to, aside from a rare case like Mitt Romney, for the most part, the Republican Party is not looking forward. And if they are looking forward, they're looking forward to Donald Trump leading the party, perhaps again in 2024.
We're going to take some phone calls and get some opinions from our listeners and also some shots at this trivia question, which has two prizes today. But let's go first to David, who's been on the line. Hi, David. What's your question or comment?
Yes, hi. I'm calling in for Ken Rudin. Speaking of Ken Rudin, not a first-time caller. I don't have a question specifically for Ken, but I do have an answer to the trivia question.
Okay. So again, just as a reminder to our listeners, the trivia question is, who was the last Ohioan to leave office to serve in a presidential a cabinet? And we want both a Republican and a Democrat who left office to take a cabinet position at the federal level. And
But David has to decide, give us whether it's one or the other.
Yes, I do understand that. Let me ask you first, Ken, you're not talking specifically about Congress, right? It could be any elected official who left office to...
Somebody in office, correct.
Okay, I do have an answer there on the Democratic side. That would be former Attorney General Richard Cordray, who left office to join the Obama administration.
That's not correct, because Cordray was defeated by Mike DeWine for attorney general, and then he joined the Obama administration. So he was already out of office.
Oh, David, that was actually what I was thinking, too. So that's a good guess. We do appreciate you listening and calling in, though. And there's still time for you to give it some more thought and call back. Thank you for listening. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Let's go to Tony now. Hi, Tony. What's your question or comment?
Hi, good afternoon. My question is just regarding the recent Supreme Court filing. With around 50% of Senate Republicans filing amicus briefs in support of subverting the election, I've seen a lot of different members of Congress reaching out saying that they would like to see a consequence for this action. My question is holding them accountable dangerous? Will it set a precedent that we don't want to be setting? And do you think that there are any consequences that should or could happen due to the attempt to overthrow the election?
Tony, thank you so much for the call. We'll hang up and let our panelists address your question. Let's go to Rachel Bloom first. I mean, in terms of the Congress members, including Brad Winstrup of Ohio, who signed on to support this Texas lawsuit that was swiftly denied by the Supreme Court, and any of the other senators who are suggesting that the election could or should be overturned or supporting the president's baseless claims, are they representing their constituents?
I think this gets to the heart of a question that's core to democratic theory and the idea of what it means to be a representative democracy or a republic, which is whether these politicians are supposed to represent the median voter, the average person in their district, who we usually assume is moderate, or if they are pawns of a party. So with Brad Winstrup, for example, I would doubt that the majority of voters in his district support this. I mean, it's possible, but based on what the country seems to think, it's unlikely. It seems that he's a little bit more concerned with his appeal to the party base. And there are a lot of reasons that the system is working like that right now. But the division is pretty clear. This has brought all of it into sharp relief that many politicians right now are more beholden to party and to really seeming like they're on the right team than they are to the needs of their constituents.
We just got an email from Joe at talk@wvxu.org, where you can send your comments as well, talk@wvxu.org. Joe writes, quote, "Why isn't a discussion being made about Trump and his Republican supporters being engaging in sedition, pure and simple? It's an attack on democracy." 513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation or to take a chance on the trivia question. We'll go back to the phone lines now. We have Jordan. Jordan, I understand you want to try to answer the trivia question. Tell us which party you're guessing and who your guess is.
Well, I'm a Republican, so I think I will guess the Republican side.
All right.
I believe it was Rob Portman, who used to be my congressman in the 2nd District.
Ken?
You know something? You know something? He may be right. I think he did leave the House to become.
He was the office of budget. I thought it was he trade? It wasn't budget.
Trade or budget. And that's not the answer I had, but I think that Jordan is right. I am now resigning as political junkie.
Oh, my goodness, because that isn't the answer that you gave me. And here's what we're going to do, because we need to clarify, perhaps, and maybe we should have done this off air. isn't there, like, we're having this conversation about Pete Buttigieg right now, right? Because I saw some articles suggest he's going to be the first openly gay member of a cabinet because he would be transportation secretary. But we saw a lot of countering from Republicans suggesting Rick Grenell was the first cabinet-level official, though he was not confirmed by the Senate. He was only acting. So you have these nuances to serving in the cabinet, and then there are cabinet-level positions that aren't necessarily in the cabinet. Can you help us understand, perhaps, Ken?
Oh, that's the thing. I didn't think of Portman because if he was trade representative, you know something, we're not giving Jordan a button just yet.
Okay.
I think we need to look up but Rob Portman, I didn't think of because I know it wasn't he didn't join the cabinet. He did leave he did leave Congress to join the administration, but he didn't become a member of the cabinet.
Well, here's what we're going to do.
If I'm wrong, he'll get maybe he'll just get a half of it. We'll do a Solomon thing here. He'll just get a button that says political and without the junkie on it or vice versa.
We're going to look into this at the break that we have coming up. Jordan, I do want you to stay on the line. Our producer, Selena, is going to take your information in case we conclude that you were correct. So stand by. We do appreciate you calling and obviously giving a good answer. We rang the bell for you, so I don't know how we rescind the button. We might be giving three buttons out, Ken, of these rare political junkie buttons. So hopefully we have three of them lying around.
I think there may be an asterisk. There may be an asterisk with Portman, but I think Jordan deserves a button.
Okay, Jordan.
He did leave Congress to join the administration, but not the cabinet.
We're going to get some. This is obviously a very tightly controlled quiz show, so we need to make sure that we get something correct. Jordan, I'm going to place you on hold. Selena Reeder, our producer, is going to take your information, and I am sure there will be a political junkie button on the way. So stand by for that. However, if you're still guessing, if you still want to guess on the Republican side, we'll accept answers because of Ken Rudin's gigantic screw up that none of us fact checked here. So we're gonna fix this. 513-419-7100.
Michael, can I just jump in for one quick second?
Sure.
Because I'm very interested in what Joe sent earlier about whether, I think it was Joe who said something about perhaps the Republicans who backed the overturning of the will of the people in the election should be up for sedition. Bill Pascrell, a New Jersey Democrat, said similar thing. He said that maybe these Republicans, these 126 House members, shouldn't be sworn in because they're not much different than those who supported secession during the Civil War. So there is deep division in Congress about what to call these 126 Republicans who want to upend the will of the people. So that's a good question.
Let's go to Jack now. He's waiting on the line. Jack, you've got an answer in the trivia question. What's your response?
Well, I'm on the Republican side, and I wanted to say William Saxby.
That is my answer.
Okay, Jack, because you gave us the answer that Ken Rudin was looking for, first, let us congratulate you. And second, let me let you know that we're going to place you on hold, and Selena Reeder is going to take your information, and we're going to send a political junkie button your way. Happy holidays to you, Jack. Congratulations. Thanks for listening and making the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
William Saxby, 1974, he left the Senate. He was already retiring, but he left the Senate early to become the Attorney General in the Nixon cabinet.
Okay, we still, however, for you political junkie trivia fans, we have the Democrat answer that we still need. We are looking for who was the last now Ohio Democrat to leave elected office to serve in a president's cabinet. We are looking for the Democrat, or apparently a Democrat. Who knows, as Ken is right on this side of the aisle as well. We're going to take a moment to step away and confirm what we're asking, and we'll come back with more of your comments. We're joined by the political junkie and Dr. Rachel Bloom for the University of Oklahoma. More coming up on the other side of this. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It's our monthly discussion of national news and politics and your phone calls and comments. We're joined today by Zoom by the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hi, Ken.
Hello, Michael.
And University of Oklahoma Assistant Professor of Political Science, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Dr. Bloom, hello.
Hello again.
So just for some clarification on our trivia question today, Ken, I'm just looking up on the White House archives from the Obama administration.
I did the same thing.
And so, like, when you sent this, I thought cabinet means secretary of something or other, right? And I guess they've also listed, like, EPA, chief of staff.
Well, the U.S. trade representative is a cabinet-level position. It's not in the cabinet, but it's cabinet-level. Therefore, I don't think I'm wrong, but Jordan deserves a button for Rob Portman.
Okay, so we're looking for someone who served as secretary something or other or attorney something or other.
Okay, that's the way I see it, the cabinet, right?
Okay, consider the trivia question officially amended, and we are still looking for the other half of this. There's still a political junkie button available. Let me repeat the question. Who was the last now Ohio Democrat to leave an elected office to serve in a cabinet? If you know the answer to that question, 513-419-7100 is the number to call. You can also email your thoughts, not on the trivia. We'll take your comments, though, at talk@wvxu.org. We'll go to the phone lines now where John is waiting. Hi, John. What's your question or comment?
Yes, hello. I also had Portman, but that's not it. Hey, but anyway, I was wondering what you guys thought. Some people think the president is using this dispute about the election that he clearly lost as an opportunity to scam his followers out of up north of $200 million so far. What do you guys think about that?
John, we appreciate the call. Thanks for asking. We'll hang up and let our panel address that. Ken, the president does like to make money, but I mean, there are obviously rules surrounding the way money raised in the context of a campaign can be spent. But, you know, the president has not been above these types of accusations. Your thoughts on the way that they're going about raising money for his so-called defense?
Steve Bannon is under indictment because he also tried to scam Trump supporters into funding something that was bogus. But there are people who say that the people that were by Trump asking for millions of dollars, which he's gotten, I think he's gotten over $200 million since the election for ostensibly fighting, supporting his efforts to overturn illegal votes. But a lot of people are saying that what he's doing is actually pocketing the money for his whatever lifestyle he decides to undertake in his years out of the White House, you know, as he's preparing for a run for president, as he says, in 2024. So a lot of the money that people are giving for the defense fund or the legal defense fund could very well go into Trump's ambitions for the years following.
Let's talk a little bit about the next president, Democrat Joe Biden, who will take office on January 20 after winning the November election. He's starting to announce cabinet level positions and cabinet positions, Ken, now that we know the special nuance of how to use those terms. And as recently as yesterday announced, former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg as his nominee for Secretary of the Department of Transportation, former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm as the Secretary in the Department of Energy. Dr. Bloom, we also heard early on of Neera Tanden from a Washington, D.C.-based think tank, a progressive think tank, being named the director of the Office of Management and Budget. And I have to say that if my social media feeds are any indication, and they're not always correct, of course, it looks to me that the anger about some of these nominees are not so much coming from Republican opponents as they are from people to Biden's left, people that might have supported Bernie Sanders in the primary, for example. So while we're seeing that type of criticism hurled from Biden's left, we're seeing something weird taking place on the right side as well, where you have Republicans going after their two Republican Senate candidates in Georgia in a critical election for them. Are there civil wars taking place among the parties right now that could be more than just Twitter commentary?
Oh, yes, certainly. And I think you've highlighted the interesting dynamics here. Biden is facing, I think, challenges from two different directions, and one is from the left. Some of the people he's named so far have been more moderate, and he has received quite a bit of criticism from the left because a lot of Sanders supporters, understandably, feel like they put their support behind Biden, even though they didn't really want to. And the deal that they thought they struck was the insertion of more progressive people and policies into the top of the party and into these kinds of positions. Now, there's still time for him to nominate plenty of progressives, but this is where we run into the other issue, which is on the right. So Biden has said he would like to name a Republican to the Commerce position, but then we run into this question of what kind of Republican? Would this be a Lincoln Project, never Trump-style Republican, or a dyed-in-the-wool Trump supporter? Because there are those two wings of the Republican Party right now. And all of this gets to a bigger obstacle that Biden's facing, which is how to be the president of an entire country when one party, or at least half of one party, doesn't even believe you were rightfully elected. Half of your own party doesn't or isn't happy you got the nomination. And you have so much division. So no matter what Biden does, someone's going to be upset about it, even though he is trying very hard to build these kind of cross-cutting coalitions that he hopes would allow for more effective governing.
Let me ask Ken Rudin, do we pay too much attention to the more extreme wings of the party in discussing these things? Will Joe Biden find success by being a more moderate, more centrist person? Are we going to find that there are Americans who are hungry for that?
I don't think we're overstating the divisions at all. And it's not just the Bernie Sanders people. There were African-Americans, people of color, who said, look, we elected Joe Biden in Georgia. We elected Joe Biden in Pennsylvania. And, for example, to be talking about an attorney general, every candidate I've seen for attorney general so far is white. Doug Jones or Sally Yates or Merrick Garland, and they're saying, oh, wait a second, what about everything we did to elect Joe Biden? So, women are not happy with all the numbers. There are a lot of people who are just tired of it being a second or a third Obama administration. There's not much imagination there. There's just names from the famous names from the past, like Tom Vilsack at agriculture, things like that. Javier Becerra, the Attorney General of California, put in charge of HHS, which is not his bailiwick. So there's a lot of division, not just from Bernie Sanders, but from the left. And I think it's important because, look, Joe Biden has so much on his plate. I mean, not the least of which is a pandemic that is killing 3,000 people a day. I mean, God forbid that Donald Trump could pay attention to it. But I mean, Joe Biden has that thing. So to have to try to at least get off on the right foot by making sure that the vaccine gets, approved and is developed and distributed around the country, and then to have to worry about the folks on the left yapping, it's a serious problem, and we could see it. It could possibly, and especially if the Republicans win at least one of the Georgia runoff Senate seats on January 5th, then the Republicans will have control of the Senate. So you'll have the left yapping at his heels, saying he's not doing enough, and the Republican Senate not willing to give him much, as Mitch McConnell is likely to do.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to share your thoughts. We'll go back to the phone lines now, where we find Grace. Hi, Grace. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Well, I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
To any sentient being, it seems that Donald Trump is a train wreck, taking on water with every tweet, like a Titanic or something. I don't understand why the Republican leadership continues to support this individual? Why aren't they looking for someone else within the party to come forward to lead them in the 2024 arena? I don't understand why Brad Renstrup and Rob Portman would not, for example, come forward and look for someone else to follow at this point.
Grace, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for the call and sharing those thoughts. We'll hang up and let our panelists address your question and comment. Let's go to Dr. Bloom on that. Is Trump only going to loom over the Republican Party if he continues to flirt with the possibility of running again in 2024? Or is there such a thing as Trumpism that perhaps another Trump-like candidate could emerge from the GOP?
Trumpism and its lasting effect is something I've been thinking a lot about lately, doing a lot of data analysis on. And I think an important thing to remember here is that Trumpism is a lot bigger than Trump. If we can boil it down, it's this idea of the politics of status threat. When you have a lot of people who don't really understand why their world has changed or why they don't feel like they have the dominant status in society that they deserve, and then along comes someone who gives them this explanation. It's these other bad people who you've never really met who are different than you. And Trump's not the first person to do that. The Tea Party was laying the groundwork for this for about 8 years before Trump emerges on the scene. We could think of him as maybe the culmination of their efforts. But even that's not new. We saw this in 1964 with Barry Goldwater. We saw it with the John Birch Society. We saw it with the America Firsters in the 50s. We saw it with the second wave of the Ku Klux Klan in the 1920s. This is something that's been just on the fringes, just in the shadows of American politics for a very, very long time. And it has a lot to do with our country's inability to tackle questions of race and with the kind of constant maneuvers by, I guess we could say, white elites to try to convince poor white people that their enemy is poor people of other ethnicities rather than maybe rich elites. So it's all kind of coming to a head. And the economic problems of COVID don't make this any easier. So I don't think that this strain of status-obsessed politics is going to go away when Trump leaves the White House, or even if he doesn't run in 2024. It's something that I think will take a bit of time for the Republican Party to work out of its system. And it's proven really effective with voters. I think that as 2024 becomes closer, maybe we won't see Trump running again. He's not a super young and spry guy, but we'll probably see someone who has their own new version of this that brings together whatever coalition the Republican Party thinks will help it win in 2024.
Let's go back to the...
Here's the difference, though, with Barry Goldwater, though. When Barry Goldwater lost in 1964, the Republicans learned a lesson, moved to the center, and elected Richard Nixon 4 years later. In 2020, even though Trump lost, the Republicans did great down the ballot. They gained 11 seats in the House. They gained in the governorships. They kept their Senate losses to a minimum. I don't compare this to Goldwater because the Republican Party doesn't feel it did anything wrong. Trump got 74 million votes. I think there's a lot of reckoning that the Republican Party is going to need to do, not anytime soon, if they're going to come back to normalcy.
Yes, and I think this isn't going to fade with Trump is basically the point of saying this strain has been around in politics for a while, and now it is front and center.
We go back to the phones now where we find Kevin. Hi, Kevin. What's your question or comment?
Hello. I'm talking about Mitch McConnell's ability to stop things like cabinet officials from being appointed and federal judges, and going back to the Merrick Garland thing. Garland thing that it says that they're supposed to advise and consent. It doesn't say they can ignore. And could he not just hold off indefinitely any Supreme Court nominee that Biden may have, or any federal judge that comes up?
Okay.
He got away with it once. Why can't he keep doing it?
Kevin, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your question. Obviously, Ken, Mitch McConnell was reelected in November. He'll be serving another term in the U.S. Senate. And whether or not he's the majority leader, the minority leader, hinges on what happens in Georgia, where two seats are up for election in a runoff on January the 5th. And I guess if we anticipate that Mitch McConnell is the majority leader, what type of control do we expect him to wield over Biden's appointments? These people work together in the Senate for a long time.
Yeah, but that's true. They're right. For decades they worked together in the Senate, but that's different when between two senators and a Republican majority leader in the Senate. Look, the fact is that Mitch McConnell, even before Donald Trump came here, Mitch McConnell helped lead the effort to block tons of Obama judicial nominations, let alone Merrick Garland, and had that left those vacancies open when Trump became president. So Mitch McConnell is canny. He's very proud of what he did with the judges, and he's not going to go easy on Biden when it comes to controversial cabinet officials or judicial nominations. And that's why the election on January 5th in Georgia are so, so crucial. Democrats have to win both. They can't just win one. They have to win both Senate seats for a 50-50 tie, and then letting Kamala Harris break the tie for the Democrats to have the majority.
Quick reminder, we still have one political junkie, one of these rare political junkie buttons available. If someone can answer the trivia question, the other half of it, who was the last Ohio Democrat to leave elected office to serve in a president's cabinet? We already got at least two answers for the Republican side. I think let's go to Bob now. He's waiting on the line. I believe you've got an answer to that, Bob.
Anthony Celebrezze.
Ken?
This is the correct answer.
How about that? Josh was asleep.
Anthony Celebrezze was the mayor of Cleveland, and in 1962, President Kennedy named him Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, HEW. Celebrezze is the last Democrat in elected office to leave office to join the cabinet.
How about that? And we think that's correct. Well, we're going to say that's going to hold up. And
that is correct.
Bob, thank you for the call. I'm going to place you on hold. Our producer, Selena, is going to take your information and send that button your way. Thanks for calling in and happy holidays to you. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It's our monthly discussion. Continuing now, we talk national news and politics and take your phone calls. We're joined by the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hi, Ken.
Hello, Michael.
And University of Oklahoma Assistant Professor of Political Science, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Hi, Rachel.
Hi again.
You can call 513-419-7100 to join our conversation or email talk at wvxu.org. We got an email from Steve who writes, please walk me through the recent Wisconsin Supreme Court case that decided on a 4-3 basis to reject the case presented to throw out ballots cast in November on the basis of how those votes were cast. That, to me, is very scary to think that Wisconsin was one Supreme Court justice away from disenfranchising voters and thereby presumably overturning the results of the election on the basis of how people voted. Ken, the judiciary played a significant role in protecting any attempt to overturn, or I should say protecting the election results from being overturned. And a lot of these judges involved were Republican. But were any of these decisions surprisingly close to you, the way Steve characterizes the one in Wisconsin?
Steve is exactly right. That is a problem with having partisan elections for judicial nomination, judge positions. The fact that they're elected on a partisan campaign, Wisconsin is known for that. It's a slightly Republican majority. So thank goodness that the rest of them, saw the merits of the case more than the partisanship. But you're absolutely right. Had it been one switch of a vote, it wouldn't have determined the election. But it's so far, every judge, every judicial body, including many who were appointed by President Trump, have thrown out these challenges, these baseless challenges, and the Republic holds.
We got an email from Jeff who writes, we always enjoy Political Junkie. And one of his questions is, will any of Biden's cabinet picks be approved by the Senate? Rachel, should we expect any of these cabinet members these cabinet nominees that we know of so far to face a higher level of scrutiny than perhaps is typical?
Well, I think a high level of scrutiny is is pretty typical now, or at least has been since 2008 when Obama was elected for his first term. Some of it depends on what happens in Georgia. That could have a slight impact. Some of the nominees are a little more centrist than others, but I don't think anyone is expecting an easy Senate confirmation process. That would require something like Mitch McConnell becoming very cooperative with the Democrats, and or several Republican senators consistently siding with the Democrats. Now, that is a little bit more likely. We have seen senators like Mitt Romney consistently do that. But when you're relying on party switching for a nomination or a nominee to be confirmed, you're on thin ice. So I think this is something that everyone's watching and is a little bit nervous about.
Neera Tandem, who's the possible Biden choice for director of the budget, she has alienated conservatives by constantly mocking them and ridiculing them on social media. If anybody is going to be a real controversial choice who could be defeated by Republicans, it's Neera Tandem.
After all of these years of President Trump behaving the way he does and insulting people, why would they be so upset about this appointment?
Michael, for 4 years, all the Republicans who spent their whole careers fighting for fiscal sanity and fiscal stability and balanced budgets, they let Trump go wild with overextending on budget deficits. They were fine with it. Watch what happens when Joe Biden gets into office and he wants to spend something. They'll say, oh, we can't afford it because of the budget deficits. It's just all about politics. And I think everybody knows that.
We got an email from Frank, and I'll note this came in earlier this month. He was so excited that Ken Rudin was coming back on the program, and he just wants to know, with all of the pardon proof investigations going on concerning President Trump, can a convicted felon run for president in 2024? It does raise the question, Ken, that there are investigations that Trump will face. And I'm curious if you expect that there will be some type of situation where we could see a former president pulled into a courtroom.
Well, I think that's a good question. And you have to look at what's going on with Cyrus Vance, who's the district attorney of Manhattan, and the attorney general of New York, Letitia James. They both have state and civil judgments, investigations going on about finances and things like that. It could very well happen. I just want to point out, though, that Eugene V. Debs, the famous socialist, ran for president from a prison cell in, I think, 1924. So stranger things have happened.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines now where Patricia is waiting. Hi, Patricia, what's your question or comment? Do we have Patricia on the line? All right, Patricia, I'm sorry that I can't seem to connect with you. If you want to give us a call back, we'll try to take your call before the end of the show. Ken and Rachel, 2020 has been a relatively exhausting year. It's one of those years where we have a presidential election, and we were all braced for a contentious one, and we got it. But maybe what we didn't plan on a year ago was that we would be dealing with a deadly pandemic that has been handled in a way that's left more than 300,000 of our fellow Americans dead. Other major names have fallen in the past 12 months. It's been a very exhausting year. It's ending, and now the vaccines are being rolled out, and I think people are starting to see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. I thought we could talk a little bit about some of the notable names we've lost in national leadership and national politics, and Ken, Ruth Bader Ginsburg sort of tops the list here, a pretty significant loss.
It's a major loss, given the fact that she was replaced on the Supreme Court by a conservative Republican. Look, you know, I think of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I think of John Lewis, I think of people who fought for equality, both racial equality and gender equality. And I mean, look, whatever you think of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she believed in the Constitution. She believed in fairness. She fought all the way. She had obstacles her whole life, as did John Lewis. And both made major contributions to integrity, decency, and equality in this country. Both will be deeply missed.
Yep. John Lewis, Herman Cain died this year, and AIDS activist Larry Kramer, former New York City Mayor David Dinkins, John McCain's mother died just this year, Roberta McCain at age 108. Linda Tripp, whom we remember from the Clinton years and the Monica Lewinsky situation, Reverend Joseph Lowry, and of course, longtime news anchor and commentator, debate moderator, Jim Lehrer, also lost in 2020. Not lost now, though, is Patricia, who is back on the phone lines, and we have her this time. Hi, Patricia. What's your question or comment?
I'm so sorry about that.
That's okay.
Disconnected. Basically, I just wanted to know, I know that Brad Wenstrup was listed on the amicus curiae for that lawsuit, you know, to try to overturn the election.
Yes.
But after that was printed in the official document, 20 more Republican congresspeople signed on. Was Steve Chabot one of them?
I don't believe we saw Steve Chabot's name appear on that. So,
but Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader, the leader of the Republicans in the House, was among those 20 who joined it. I mean, 126 Republican members of the House supported a bid to overturn the election results. Incredible.
Patricia, thank you so much for calling twice, and we're glad that we got to connect with you. Happy holidays. Thank you for listening. We've just got a couple of minutes left. I think it's appropriate, since this is our last show, last Political Junkie show of the year, our final show of the year is tomorrow. Ken, do you have any particular New Year's resolution, perhaps as it relates to your consumption of politics?
Well, you know, every year I'm hopeful. Every year I'm wistful. This is the worst year. I mean, I'm old enough to remember 1968. I'm old enough to remember the horrors of the past. I think this is the worst year by far. I'm hopeful. But I think, look, I'm always hopeful. This is the first year, though. Perhaps maybe it's because of Donald Trump. But I don't think the ugliness or the division goes away. I'm nervous. I'm apprehensive. But I am hopeful. And I wish everybody a very happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and a safe and healthy new year.
And Dr. Bloom, what's your outlook for 2021?
I'm hopeful, partially because of what's happened this year. I think there have been a lot of ugly realities in our politics that many people, including myself at times, have tried to ignore or sweep under the rug, and we're going to have to face them. It will probably get worse before it gets better, but we'll face them. And the other thing that makes me a little bit hopeful is just watching my generation, which I'm a millennial, and I think we've been chronically disengaged from politics, partially because of the economic recessions that keep hitting us. And this year, I've seen a lot of people in my generation, and especially the younger generation, take ownership over their political fate for the first time. So no longer having conversations where they say, oh, I don't want to think about politics, I'm not political. Realizing that to be political is to be a member of society and to participate.
We usually do the Political Junkie monthly show on the last Thursday of the month. And while that's not the case this month, because we take a 2-week break on Cincinnati Edition at the end of December, it will be the case in January. So we'll plan to have Ken Rudin back on the 28th, which means the next time we all get together to chat, there will be a new president in office. So we'll see what the lay of the land is 8 days after the inauguration of President Joe Biden. Ken Rudin, Rachel Bloom, happy holidays to both of you. Thank you for spending so much time with us this year. Always appreciate the discussion.
Thank you, guys, and thank you to your audience.
Yes, happy holidays to everyone.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. As I just said, our last show of the year is tomorrow's news review. Hope that you'll join us before our little 2-week break. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our technical director is Nick Swartzel. Our assistant producer, I got to get used to saying that, he's new. Assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our show online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.